Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dragon's Library. Today, we will be reviewing Ms. Marvel, the latest Disney Plus addition to the MCU. The series follows Ms. Marvel, otherwise known as Kamala Khan, Marvel's first Islamic superhero, at least the first one who got her own individual comic, and who discovers a magic bracelet that awakens unknown powers. Learning to master her new abilities, Kamala has to contend with her family's complicated history, all while balancing her already strained family and social life. Now, before I can go over the show itself, let's talk about Ms. Marvel, or Kamala Khan. She is one of Marvel's few new characters, and one of the only new ones to find massive, widespread appeal. So, while I don't read a lot of comics, I have heard almost nothing but positive things about Ms. Marvel, and the show definitely reflects that. In addition, I have seen her in some supplemental material. I know she was in that Avengers game, she appeared in some of the Avengers cartoons later on, and I've seen her in other things like the, I think she appeared in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon I watched as a kid as well. Ms. Marvel feels like a Spider-Man for the current era. The show manages to integrate social media and the current always-online entertainment system we have in a way that feels more natural than anything I've seen on TV or even most movies in years. In addition, many of the tropes that seem to be forming in the beginning get actively subverted or ignored in a way that comes off across as much more realistic. The result might very well be one of the most relatable heroes Marvel's ever crafted, especially to someone who grew up in an era where the internet essentially started taking over. I've always felt like most shows just don't understand what they're talking about. And even when they do, a lot of the time the necessary production of a show means that it feels out of date by the time it comes out. But surprisingly, this does not feel that way. It does feel a little bit at times, but I think that's just the disconnect of it, you know, starting in production like a, you know, years prior. Still manages to come across very well, though. As for Ms. Marvel herself, she has undergone some changes, but not in the ways you usually see when adapting characters. Because I know the first thing you're all going to be like is, oh no, they changed the character, they don't understand her. No, 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 it's okay. One of the producers and the guiding hands of this was one of her co-creators, so we have, like, original source work here. It's good, it's all good. First up are her powers. In the comics, Kamala has a sort of shape-shifting ability that lets her extend and enlarge her body parts. Not full-on Reed Richards or Giant Man, but instead something more unique. However, the show changed this. The new powers allow the protagonist to generate and control a strange crystalline substance that she can project out of her body. They use this to recreate her enlarging hands and extended legs, mimicking the old abilities. But her main method of transportation, instead of extending her legs, she only used that a few times in combat, is she mainly uses these sort of like video game floating platforms, essentially, to get around. And the scenes with her developing those abilities are actually really cool. I really like them. This new power is used to recreate her enlarged hands and extended limbs, mimicking those old abilities. The official response was that the creators wanted her abilities to be more similar in tone to the other creators in the upcoming Marvel's movie. But personally, I assume they wanted to avoid the trouble that stretching powers have always had in live action. Those kind of abilities are hard to get right and have always looked very uncanny. Just watch the last Fantastic Four movie. I know that movie was crap in a lot of other ways, but it really does show just how hard it is to get that right. Even in the Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, Mr. Fantastic made a cameo. He was only there for a few seconds, and we really didn't get to see his abilities for that long because stretching abilities have just never looked good in live action. Animation, they can look amazing, but in live action, the crystal is easier for the budget of a streaming show, and is able to recreate most of her normal abilities anyway. Like I said, she can create these glowing extended arms and hands, and the first thing it does at first is literally just creating, you know, extending her fist into like a giant fist. So they do keep the core of her natural appearance and general style. The second change is instead of being an Inhuman, like from, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., since that all got retconned out of existence by Kevin Feige, she is a mutant. In fact, she is the first mutant to be confirmed for the MCU. This is actually fascinating if you know what was going on with Marvel when she was made. I listen to a lot of comics drama, even though I don't read them that often. And it's maybe more fascinating by the knowledge that one of the co-creators of Ms. Marvel was a producer for the show and ended up revealing they had originally planned to make Ms. Marvel a mutant, but it was changed due to internal Marvel policies involving the X-Men and humans at the time. It also involved Fox and Disney. It's very complicated. We still don't have all the details, but yeah, there was a lot going on. There's a reason they tried to make the Inhumans work with that shitty movie, miniseries, and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. thing, even though the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, I would say, turned out pretty well. The show focuses on Kamala Khan's heritage as a Pakistani-American and as a Muslim. Several episodes bring up the way Americans view the Muslim, you know, Islamic religion in the modern day. There's even a scene where Kamala's best friend Bruno brings someone who's being hunted by damage control to a mosque, and the friend who works there is all, like, confused. You know, he's like, well, I assume temples and churches are supposed to offer sanctuary. And the girl's like, yeah, but this is a mosque in America. Forget damage control or the FBI. I'm pretty sure sanitation has this place under surveillance. And when damage control comes to the mosque for the second time in the show, I might add, this is not even the first time they did it, the people already there have their IDs out for that head detective lady can even finish asking. It was a real moment of, wow, that's both fucked up and kind of believable. And they're all like, yeah, this isn't our first rodeo. We get it. You're going to search the whole building and you're looking for someone. You just assume they're here because, you know, racism. Like, you don't want to say it, but, yeah. I guess it's a good time to start talking to the characters. We have Kamala Khan, played by Iman Vellani, who is a perfect balance of independent, mild, frictionless parents, a creative flair to be a wonderful antagonist. Vellani does a great job playing with her. Her sidekick, guy in the chair, is Bruno, played by Matt Lintz. Yasmin Fletcher, on the other hand, is the other friend, Nakai Bahadir. Sorry if I mispronounced that. And Nimra Bucha is Najma, the leader of the villains. So I actually really like the characters. They're fun, they're relatable, and honestly, they just come across as, like, so naturalistic. One thing in particular is this, like, bully character who's turned out to not really be much of a bully. Like, she's set almost like the popular girl, like, everybody likes. And, like, in any other show, she'd be just, like, pointlessly mean, but she's actually, like, fairly good. And, you know, when she's saved by Miss Marvel in the way that outs her powers to the public, but not like her, she was in costume at the time, and she's interrogated by damage control, she just plays ignorant because she's like, well, she saved my life. I'm not going to, you know, out this person and start giving you all the details. You guys are pretty shady. Overall, it's an excellent show and a return to quality for Disney Plus, back to the days of Loki and WandaVision. Miss Marvel shows that Disney Plus can still deliver excellent shows in spite of more recent examples, where they've reduced to more of an average level of quality. I give this a 9 out of 10. Definitely check this out. You'll have to for that Marvel's movie coming out next year, because the ending and characters are important for that. This franchise will never end, and I don't know if I'm okay with that. But this was a good show, so who cares? So, yeah, that's it. Moving on to spoiler section, I guess. So, here we are. 3, 2, 1, spoilers. Okay, what do we got here? Well, we got a decent amount of stuff. So, there's some interesting things going on in Ms. Marvel. Mostly because the character changed in ways that affected the plot. So, essentially, the main plot revolves around this bracelet that Kamala finds. It's a gift from her grandmother that she sent in with a bunch of other junk. Her mother wants to put it away, but she's really caught up with it. And when she goes to cosplay as Captain Marvel, because she's like her favorite superhero, for this, you know, Avengers convention that her parents don't want her to go to, she ends up putting it on and she starts having flashes of powers. It's eventually revealed the bracelet didn't actually give her abilities. It just woke them up in her and it seems to amplify her powers when she's wearing it. That power is to control this substance from an alternate reality because her great-grandmother was a djinn, which is a, you might know them as a djinn or a genie. Although it's way more complicated. I actually did some research. I don't know a huge amount about, like Hindu or Muslim or that area of the world, the belief systems there. It's just not an area I've studied recently. It's one of my blind spots, mythologically speaking. But I did do some research, and djinns actually have a very fascinating history, as a lot of different ways. They've been seen sometimes as an evil possessing spirit, sometimes as just kind of like another species, you know, just another being in the world. There's a lot of connotations to them. They go for the whole they're evil spirits thing, but it's more if they were beings from another dimension that's, you know, on top of ours. It's basically a parallel reality. And her mother, her great-grandmother, along with a small group of others, were banished from that place. The main villain is now the leader. And the great-grandmother thought they all died. They were trying to find these bracelets so they can get home, but they failed, and in doing so, the great-grandmother decided to have a life, and once she had a kid, she didn't want to give up the bracelets anymore, because turns out that ripping away the hole could potentially destroy our world in the process. And, you know, she had a family here, she didn't want them to die. So, she ended up being murdered, but her, you know, daughter took the bracelet with her and got away with you know, her husband. And Kamala, as a result, can use the ability. But that actually is revealed to be only part of the truth. See, in this world, no one else can use the ability. And it's hinted that maybe the half-human son of the main villain can also use it. But he would need, like, another bracelet to activate it. And it turns out the reason Kamal and eventually he can actually do it is because they're actually mutants. So the bracelet woke up her X-gene, essentially. And because of her heritage, her X-gene gave her a control over that energy in our world where her species isn't supposed to be able to use it. So it essentially allowed her to use abilities that even her species shouldn't be able to do in a place they shouldn't be able to do it. Because, and the bracelet acted as a trigger to wake it all up. This is seen later on in the film where a similar infusion of power ends up waking up, you know, her sort of distant relative. What would that even be? Like, I guess it's her great, it's her granduncle, but like, they're like the same age, so it's a little weird. Ah, immortals, always fucking up family trees. Actually, there's this really funny scene too, because all the others are like, yeah, what's your power? We don't really age that well. We don't age that much. We age very slowly. And you're probably going to be like that too. And she's like, so yeah, I'm like, we're all like 100 years. Like, oh my God, I wouldn't want to date with him. No. He's 17. I only had him recently. It's like, oh, thank God. That would be really creepy. It's just like that moment of, you can like feel this show, like, I'm just imagining this show on a streaming service, and then an anime pops up next to it, and it's just like, hey, is that a 14-year-old girl? It's like, no, it's a 1,000-year dragon, so it just looks like a 14-year-old girl. It's like, yeah, isn't that awesome? It's like, no, get away from me. Get away from me, anime. I see you there, anime, and I am not proud of that. I don't like that part of the medium. I mean, it's not just anime that does it. A lot of fiction does stuff like that, and it's weird. I just love the way this show calls stuff like that out. But yeah, I really do like the characters. They're all fun, interesting, and none of them really do things that are too unrational. Personally, I found her relationship with her mom very relatable, and just in general, a lot of the parent-child dynamics felt like a lot more... So, parent-child dynamics in a lot of shows just felt unrealistic to me. They've always felt disconnected. But this show was weird because I'd watch scenes of even, like, background characters. Like, you have a bunch of kids on their phones. They're apparently posting on Instagram. And it's like, the parents, like, grab the phones or don't post things on, like, Snapchat. It's like, we're not on Snapchat. We're on Instagram. It's like, Snap, Insta, whatever. I don't want you chatting anywhere. And it's just like that moment of, oh, God, my gosh, that's too real. That we've all had that moment, right? The parent takes something away from you, calls it the completely wrong name because they don't know shit. And then you're just like, can you just say the right name? It's not that hard. Just remember the name that I say like every goddamn day. Oh, it's too real. It's too real. The cringe. Oh, I could feel those days where I'd be reading something or watching something and they just walk in and say, put down that Pokemon. And I'm like, this is not even the same show. And you can just feel the generational disconnect. It is strong, but it's also very realistic. Like some of these scenes could have been ripped from my life, quite frankly. And it's just, I just think it's really a testament to the writing and the actors that they were able to get that across. I definitely think some of the scenes are not as well done as others, but I would say on average, they're actually better than normal. In addition, I really like the characters don't draw as heavily from tropes as you initially think. When she first goes to the costume party and she's like, you know, at school, there's like this, you know, the popular girl that everyone likes and they run into each other in the hallway. She's like, what the hell? Watch where you're going. And, you know, you're obviously like, oh, this is where she starts bullying Kamala. And it's like Kamala's just like, you know, Kamala's just fine. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't watching where I was going. Hey, I really like that coat of yours. And she's like, oh, thanks. I didn't expect to be complimented. Thank you. That's very nice of you. And then just walk away amicably. It's just like, oh, so she's not the mean girl. Disney, are you growing? You're walking away from that trope? I mean, that trope was staring you in the face and you just didn't take it. I'm so proud of you, Disney. Some restraint. In fact, she even turns into, like, kind of a good character later on, which is really, really weird, because the second I saw her, I was like, oh, I know what we're expecting here. But no, see, after she gets to the party and everybody's, like, wowing over her costume, which seems pretty basic compared to Ms. Marvel, but, you know, she's the pretty popular girl, so everyone's flocking around her. And Ms. Marvel ends up accidentally revealing her powers and then having to save her from a fall with the powers. So, and she's like really grateful. She's like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. And everybody's like, oh wow, you win the costume project. Damn, because, you know, some of them definitely think it's like a fax or maybe, oh, you know, it's a superhuman. That's pretty cool. We know those exist. There are like a dozen of them running around at this point. You know, dozens and dozens at this point. They're just all over the place. Superhumans aren't, you know, rare anymore. So, you know, obviously there are some people taking photos and posting stuff. So Damage Control, they're the people who are supposed to watch out for superhumans and clean up the messes on their fights, get a hold of it. And at first they seem like fine. They're like, okay, we got to find the superhuman. We got to, you know, take him into custody. We got to say, okay, what are your powers? What are you doing here? And they seem reasonable at first. Like, it's like, okay, we have a random kid running around with, like, potentially nuclear powers. They even say, like, her powers are pretty powerful. Like, the scanner is picking up massive energy readings from her. We need to figure out what her deal is, make sure she's not a threat. That's just... But as the series, as it goes on, you get this feeling that the two cops, especially the female one, really doesn't like the idea of a kid having this much power. And she starts, like, labeling her as a threat when she hasn't really done anything. Like, she tries to save a kid, and she kind of messes up, but the kid's okay. Like, the kid doesn't get permanently hurt. She did save him from fall. She just, you know, is not in full control of her powers yet, so the kid almost falls to his death, like, two more times. And she ends up having to run away from them, and they're all like, threat, threat, threat. And you can just, like, feel the distrust from that girl, that lady. I'm like, oh, okay, so Damage Control is just going to be, like, the adults after them. And for a while they are, like, they come in like drones, they blow up this kid's, like, the convenience store area where this kid where this kid hangs out when one of the other where the other, you know, her her granduncle slash cousin-ish person, comes to see her, her friend, cause he's looking for help, and they literally just blow it up after, like, the guy destroys one drone, they just send another drone with a freaking rocket launcher. It's just like, okay, this escalated way too quickly. You went from, we need to subdue her, and they use, like, non-violent weapons. They're using, like, sonic cannons, so they're definitely trying to go for, like, a non-lethal, non-majorly violent, but then there are just suddenly drones with rocket launchers, and they're talking about arresting her and making it a big deal. And you get the sense that this person really doesn't trust, you know, superheroes or powered individuals, and... I'm getting sort of like a mutant's flair from it even before they revealed she was a mutant, honestly. And you expect it's like, okay, so Damage Control is going to be like the Sentinel program or whatever for the mutants. And once you hear, if you heard that she was a mutant beforehand, you'd be like, oh, I see what they're going for. There's actually a surprise though. See, when the school, so at the very end, the main group of bad guys have been eliminated and Kamala is just trying to help her cousin slash granduncle, whatever you want to call him. Who, you know, obviously gained his abilities when his mom died. She died sacrificing herself, but what remained of her power that she couldn't access flowed into her son, and that's how his powers are unlocked. He's just trying to get out of the country and get to safety, because he's, you know, he worked with his mom, even though he's trying to stop her near the end, so she's kind of wanted. And he just wants to get out of the country and live his life now. He's lost everything, and he just kind of wants a fresh start. So Kamala agrees to help him, but... in the end, they get cornered and they have to go to the school to hide, but, you know, obviously Damage Control is right behind them. They're coming to surround the school. And they run into the popular girl who Damage Control interviews. Like, I figured I was you. Don't worry. I didn't say anything. You saved my life. I would never repay someone like that. And I'm here to help. And I figured out they were after you. I've been trying to get in contact with you for a while. It's just like, holy shit. She's actually a pretty decent person. I mean, she's like a social media star, but like, she's not like a caricature of it, if that makes sense. Like, she's an actual person beneath it all, which I found interesting. And she even actually uses what little ability she has to the benefit. Like, she starts literally streaming to her, you know, 1,000 followers. And it's just like, hey, guys, listen to me right now. Damage Control has gone way overboard. I am in the school right now with the, they call her like Nightlight for our DP ones. Like, I'm with Nightlight, and a few others. And Damage Control is hunting us down in a school. We're just kids. And we need everyone to talk with us right now because we do not want to be silenced or dragged from the night by people who are clearly breaking some laws. They cannot be legal. And it's just like, and immediately people start like retweeting this and sending it to everybody. And, you know, before you know it, there's a massive crowd of everyone nearby standing outside the school with the barricades where, Damage Control, and they're just shouting like, what the hell are you doing? These are kids hiding out in a school building. And while the Damage Control was heading to the building, you get this call that redefines so much of their actions. So she basically gets a call. It's like, she's about to like send everybody in to go like raid the building, you know, the crowds outside and everything. And she gets a call. And it's like the director, you know, the regional director or whatever. Like, they're basically her boss. One of the heads up for the damage control area. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? I have reports that you are hunting down children. We have protocols for that. In a school building. Do you have no regard for tact? You're supposed to do things peacefully, and if they do resort to violence, you're supposed to make sure people are not involved. You're supposed to make sure that collateral damage is not done. We are goddamn damage control. Do you know how bad it looks if we blow up a school while hunting down children? And you really get the sense that he's just like, this is not how we do things. And you suddenly realize, holy shit, she's basically been going rogue because she thinks this has to be done. And it, oh my god, it's just so... It's so ridiculous, and it really drives home that, oh, this isn't normal. She's essentially like using their level of deadly force for like armed combatants on children because they have powers, which is not a good look. And the director is like, we don't want to deal with the PR from this. You were already going to be punished for this BS. And afterwards, she's like, you need to come back here right now. We were going to be having a long talk. She's like, all right, I hear you. We will proceed, you know, we'll wait for your directive and proceed with caution when you do. And then immediately the guy's like, do we have okay? It's like, yeah, we have the okay. Go ahead. She's like, I don't care. I'll get these kids. I'll prove that they're like, you know, and it's I'm not sure if you picked up, but the understatement to all this is I'll get these terrorists and then everyone will see that I did the right thing. The racism is strong in this one. She has a few offhanded comments throughout this, complaining, you know, generally about how we used to do things, and that 9/11 paranoia is way on her. Like, she just jumps on like the description that she might be from like Southeast Asia or that general area, and she's like, oh, I've got a terrorist. Like, you can just feel inside her. She's like, I've got a kid terrorist. The first thing they do, like, the cheerleader doesn't even give them, like, the popular girl, I mean, John Mastrisky's the cheerleader, popular girl doesn't even give them information. She's really unwilling. She's like, I don't even remember her skin color. It wasn't important. I was falling to my death. And she doesn't even tell them. She just, like, keeps saying no, no. It's like, I don't know. And she just gets quiet a little bit when they mention it. It's like, well, maybe. I mean, that's not really an answer. And she's like, no, I'm sure of it. I get it now. It's one of those. And she immediately sends a squad to the mosque. You have to understand, at this point, all Kamala had done is use her powers to save someone who fell at a convention. That is... And she says, you might be hiding someone. I'm like, holy shit, the subtext in this. The subtext is just... So yeah, she sends in a squad, obviously, you know, breaking orders. With the inherent idea of like, you know, I'll do it and then they'll have to keep me around because the public will demand it or whatever. You know, those people, the ones who think they can break the rules and still get what they want because the public will back them because clearly everyone will see I'm right, you know, for doing something horrible. That ties into our last book with the, ordinary monsters when we talked about how people try and justify their terrible actions. Huh. Fun thematic link. I love that. Anyway, she has this big scene where her men are like, you know, doing it. They're basically like live streaming the whole attack too. And it's just like this. You could only imagine the, oh my God, we are goddamn ruined. We are going to have to do so much work to clear our names after this that all the people at Damage Control must have been doing. And they might reveal Damage Control to eventually be a villain, but at this point, they're not being portrayed entirely as one. It's really, like, by the time this ends, it really is portraying these two as, like, rogue agents who took a bunch of their men and did things completely out of line. I mean, they just, like, blew up a building at one point. It's just, like, so disgusting. It's not even funny. Overuse of force for just, like, children. They're teenagers. Oh, it's hilarious. So, all in all, this moves into, you know, a big fight near the end, and the other guy is, like, losing control of his powers, and eventually he just kind of disappears. It was a little unclear what was happening there, but he eventually gets away. And he essentially And, you know, Kamala had been fighting, and while his powers have been a bit destructive, she had always made sure to, like, you know, keep people safe. So, like, he actually, you know, he saw, like, the detective lady brandishing a gun at him, he threw a car at her, and he, you know, put too much force in it. And he suddenly realized, oh no, it's throwing it at the crowd, and Kamala just reaches over and grabs it and gently sets it down, you know, in clear view of everyone, so that once the other guy is gone, the FBI lady looks like a dick for trying to arrest her, and the people swarm her and let her get away. The Department of Control let them get away, Kamala get away. And then that investigative lady immediately gets a call from her boss, and he's like, oh, don't even bother coming back to the office. We saw this whole disaster. You are goddamn fired. Don't even bother. Do not come back here. I'm serious. Oh, we will be prosecuting you. Don't worry. We will call you. You just get this feeling of like, oh, finally, freaking cathartic justice. Oh. Like, this must have been just a PR nightmare. Like, this is like an agent of yours going rogue and attacking kids. Oh, that is not a good look at all. And they got it, video footage of the whole thing, a massive crowd of people. Oh, that's not good. Plus, now she's a hero, so even less good. I will say the costume looks pretty good. I like the final costume they settle on. It's very nice. The way they get the logo is kind of dumb. It's her bracelet breaks and gets the Thunderbolt look, and her mother and grandmother make her the outfit using that symbolism. I don't know. I mean, they give her a original outfit, so there's that, but still. All in all, I really like this. I wasn't expecting to like this as much as I have. I've actually been putting off watching this because there were other things coming out, and I just felt like, I can wait on this, But I wanted to eventually do it, and I was going to review Hell of a Boss this week, but I just didn't feel like doing that, because when trying to put together a review for Hell of a Boss, I just was like, you know what, this is one episode, I should wait, get the whole season, get the finale from the last episode, and just do that all at once. It's painful because I really do want to talk about it. But if I'm going to talk about it, I don't want to talk about it in multiple chunks. I want to talk about it all at once. And I've made the mistake of doing that because, especially with Disney Plus shows or internet shows, where I'll talk about it and then I'll need to talk about it immediately in a few months when the next episode comes out. And it's just like, I don't want to flood my episodes with a bunch of the same stuff. I want to do a lot of different things. So this is a good compromise. I can do this and I can wait for Hell of a Boss. Season 2. That's gonna be amazing. I hope they get that last episode of season 1 out of copyright jail or whatever the legal issue is that's keeping it locked up. That's fascinating. We'll see about that. It's weird. Anyway, with that all done, we have our announcement. So this part is going to be cut out of the YouTube launch, so don't bother looking for it there. I've actually been doing some more editing on that and trying to make those videos look better. So if you want to see my best version of this, check out the YouTube videos. The more recent ones are coming out very nicely. And I'd really appreciate it if you guys could just check it out over there because it helps me out. Anyway, so I'll be reviewing the new movie Bullet Train on Tuesday. I didn't get to see this last week because I was on call. And by Friday, I will have finished The Sandman by Neil Gaiman, which is coming out. It will be coming out the same day I release this. If all goes as well and I, you know, get it all in time. And I am a huge Neil Gaiman fanboy. I still need to read Good Omens, but I've read all the American God books. I've watched American God. Holy shit. I've read the Sandman comics. I love Neil Gaiman. I love all his work that I have touched. I think he's an amazing writer who weaves narratives based on the meaning and relevance of stories and the way they shape our world and the way ideas and belief can shape our perception of reality. And I freaking love him. So I am, and I've heard basically just nothing but good things from a few people who have seen it. I've been trying to keep myself as, you know, few detailed as possible, but oh, that's going to be something I'm going to have a lot to talk about. Even if it's bad, I'm going to have a lot to talk about because holy shit, Sandman. We're going to see Morpheus in live action. Anyway, that fanboy freakout right there aside. So that's going to be basically it. I will see you guys next time. Bye. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode, and thank you for listening to The Dragon's Library. Please subscribe to this podcast to be notified of new episodes. The Dragon's Library releases new episodes Tuesday and Friday each week, and you can follow us on Twitter at dragon_library2. If you want to suggest an episode topic, my email is in the description below. As always, thank you so much for all your support.